So today I'm going to ask you, which way are you running? You noticed when you came in there were arrows leading you to different places. If you want to go to safety, go that way. If you want to go to persecution, go that way. If you want to go to pain, go that way. If you want to go to comfort, go that way. If you want to keep your friends, go that way. If you want to suffer the loss, the possibility of losing your friends, go that way. This text that we're reading is rich in a story that we should pay very close attention to. It was written to tell these Hebrews to run looking in a very specific direction. They were told to run looking unto Jesus. They understood that Jesus had to run a race as well, and he had already run it. And he ran his race in a very specific direction with a very specific mission and a very specific calling. It was very clear why Jesus was here, which direction he was running, and what it was going to cost him. It was dangerous. It had been a big controversy. As a result, Jesus had been rejected, persecuted, abandoned, betrayed, separated from his family and his so-called friends, and even further, he was suspected of being divisive, a heretic, and even possessed by a devil. These Hebrews that this letter was written to in Hebrews, they were being told to run in the same direction as Jesus because they were dealing with a very common problem. A problem that's very common to us that you may not even notice. And it's called spiritual paralysis. They were spiritually paralyzed. The persecution, the loss, the separation, and the isolation was so intense in this group of believers in Jesus. It was so intense that it literally gripped their lives and paralyzed them. They were no longer moving. In fact, a lot of them had actually began to turn around and run in a different direction. They were leaving the faith. They were saying, maybe Jesus isn't the only way. Maybe we can include a different way of salvation. Maybe there is no hell. Maybe we in hell right now. This letter was written to deal with the spiritual paralysis that they were going through. They were stuck. They weren't moving. Their joy was gone. Their zeal had diminished. And there was no innovation, no creativity, no walking in the calling, no vision. And in light of others becoming ex-Christians, they too were on the verge of running right along with them, but in the wrong direction. Which way are you running? The attack against them was so pervasive. And what I mean by that is the attack was all throughout the land. There was nowhere that you could go that you hadn't heard of this Christian move, this Jesus is the way thing. And the attack was everywhere. It was in government. It was in the jobs. It was in the families. And even amongst the Jews, there was still severe persecution. And what once seemed like the only way to live, which was to follow Jesus Christ, when they met him, when they heard this message, they left all, they dropped everything, they changed directions to follow Jesus, which once seemed to be the only way to go, what once lit up their soul, infused their hearts with passion for people in need, to get the message of life out, to be lights in the midst of darkness, what once used to be the only way, now, at best, was questionable. It was being compartmentalized, and maybe you can do it here and there. And then they started to create this metamorphosis of you can do it your way and his way. They had no idea how malicious society could become against them. It blindsided them. It came so suddenly with so much force that many of them just took off running, but in a direction contrary to their calling. It was a real human feeling that paralyzed them. They were called to be lights in the midst of darkness. They were called to be instruments of deliverance and healing. They were called to be the carriers of the message of life to people who were dying. They were called to take that message to them. And even though Jesus had warned them up front, telling them, two in one house going to be against three. It's going to set variance. It's going to be a division. I didn't come to bring peace. I came to bring a sword. Even though he warned them right up front. Man, when that pain struck them, the pain of rejection, the pain of isolation, the pain of being falsely accused, when the pain struck them, when the persecution set in, and when it didn't look so popular to be a Christian anymore, they ran in a different direction. And those left to read this letter sat paralyzed on the verge of running away from Jesus. And what they didn't realize was pain will paralyze you, and then when you're paralyzed, you end up perverted. So it goes pain, paralysis, perversion, unless you stay in the race, running in the right direction. Even in this letter, later on in the same chapter, he says, watch out lest that root of bitterness spring up and many of y'all get defiled. Lest many of y'all end up going a different direction. That pain can set in, and sometimes it's not as obvious as a breakup. Sometimes it's not as obvious as losing a friend. It's not as obvious as losing your possessions. Sometimes the pain is just this constant dropping on your heart. I learned about that one day. One time the Holy Spirit spoke to my heart. You see that slab of concrete? One single drop, repeatedly over time, will crack it. One single drop of water, continually. And I thought about that. And in my heart, I'm wrestling with the reality of this continual dropping. And I was walking into this old church, coming into the back door, and they had these big concrete, actually limestone seals, and it was pouring down raining that day. And I just happened to look over and caught a glance of a continual dropping coming from the roof down on the seal, and it had wore a groove about 2 inches thick into that concrete seal. And the Lord was saying, that's what I'm showing you right there. That pain continually will change you if you don't turn to the Comforter. This is what these Hebrews were going through. So here they sit, reading this letter, paralyzed. Outside the group, the sudden strike against their faith had divided them into two groups. People who were running to safety, running from the pain, running from the persecution, and people who were running where they knew that what lied ahead of them was going to be pretty much more of the same. If they were going to follow Jesus, the world wasn't going to suddenly change and everybody loved them. That it didn't mean that necessarily that your marriage was going to automatically be fixed. It didn't mean that your income was going to go up. It didn't mean that your housing was going to change. It didn't mean that everything was suddenly going to be fixed. But they knew that either they're going to run the way of safety and comfort and keeping their friends and just doing what everybody else was doing, or they were going to follow Jesus and say, Jesus, you got it all. Because I'm not running for comfort. I'm running for you. The separation of family and friends and constantly being misunderstood and falsely accused and persecuted. Nobody really wants that. Amen. You know, y'all know that I went to Oklahoma City. And just so you know, this is where this message is actually coming from. I go down there, and some of y'all may not know this because you're kind of young, but in Oklahoma City was one of the worst attacks of domestic terror on the United States at the time. And so we went to the place where the Ralph P. Murrah building once stood. And there were two walls, and in the middle of the two walls, there was this big pool of reflection where they had things that had survived, and you could stand there and reflect. And on one of the walls, it said 901, and on the other wall, it said 903, because the bomb went off at 902. And you could still see the pieces of the old wall around. They just left it right there for you to see it. You could even still see the rebar where the building stood. They put out in the grass field, they put a whole bunch of chairs with lights in them, and they said that's where people were sitting at work that day when they died. And you go into the museum, and as soon as you walk into the museum, they start showing you what was happening before 9:02 when the bomb went off. So there are these panels, and there was, like, you know, there was a prayer breakfast going on at 7 o'clock, and then there was this convention going on at 8 o'clock, and then at 8:30 there was this conference, there was this meeting, and they just showed all of this. This is what was going on. People were just doing what they normally do before that bomb went off. And then you read through all of that, and then you go through this big brown door, and there's a conference room. It's a big conference table. So I happened to be like one of the first ones to get in, so I was able to sit right at the table. And they said, where you're sitting at right now is where people were sitting that day having a meeting. And there was a microphone and a cassette player recorder recording the meeting. And then you sat down, and when everybody got seated, they pushed play, and you started listening to the minutes of that meeting before 9:02. And it was just normal business, making decisions and policies and questions and asking and holding people accountable to the things that they were supposed to be doing. And then all of a sudden, you could hear the bomb go off. I literally, in that moment, was traumatized, and I wasn't even there. It was the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. The horror, the screams, the terror at 9:02 that morning. It was something that I don't think I'll ever forget. And so that sudden blow, that sudden bomb, you could hear the floors collapsing. It sounded like 20 bombs went off. But when that bomb went off, I realized that there were three groups. One group was paralyzed, the trauma. Then there were two other groups that were formed out of that. One group was running for safety. And this was after we come out of the room. So you come out of the room and you go into this other place and you watch the videos, the news footage. And that's where it hit me. Like, there's one group that's running for safety. And then there was this other group that was running for the people that needed help. One group was running for their own lives. They were running from what they thought would kill them. And one group was running right into the middle of it. And I'm thinking to myself, all of this is around Oklahoma City, but I follow Jesus, and this is the same thing. And I couldn't help but ask myself, Aaron, which way are you running? Which way are you running? deep for me. For one group, the only thing they were concerned about was their own personal safety. They weren't injured. And you can see that clearly. They weren't crippled. They were able to help others, but the only thing that mattered to them was their own life. The other group knew the risk, but they ignored it. They knew the danger, but they were willing to risk their lives to save those who couldn't help themselves. One group had friends and family members who were left behind, yet they ran towards safety because of the risk of the pain. The other group ran right into the danger for perfect strangers. People they never met, had no investment in their life, yet they ran right into the big whisk of smoke, the dust flying everywhere, debris, pieces of metal flying, cars blown up, fire, alarms going off, total chaos. They ran right into the middle of it because they said, there are people in there that need help. And I'm going. I said, wow. It's amazing. The masses were running towards safety, and there was very little in the way to stop them. It was easier to run towards safety. It was almost like you running and you just got a whole mass of blockers in front of you clearing the way because everybody's going that way. But then there was this small little group that had to actually not just risk their life going back to the danger, but to even go that way, they were going against the crowd. Everybody's going this way. And not only are they going against the crowd, they're also listening to people saying, you're going the wrong way. You're crazy if you go that way. You better turn around and go this way. They had to push their way through. They had to dodge and jump and run to go into a dangerous place for people they never met because there were people in need. And I said, Aaron, which way are you running? Which way are you running? I said, man. So I actually started to, you know, I'm like all the way in biblical mode. I was like, man, anybody got a Bible? My phone dead. That's why I was in this museum. I'm like, man, I don't need to pull out my Bible. But thankfully, I had remembered. And I'm like, this correlates with the verses we are committing to memory. So I just started to meditate in my head and actually like start comparing these people's lives who ran into that mess because people were in need to the scriptures that I was memorizing. And I'm like, okay, we're talking about wherefore seeing we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beside us and that so easily besets us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Okay, so first thing I realize is like, these people, these firemen and policemen and nurses and doctors and people from the ER and all kind of people, it's like, this is their profession. This is what they're called to do, is to go into these places. But these professionals, these firemen, they had been presented witnesses. You know, firemen, when they going into training, they watch videos of a fireman running into burning buildings and coming out with people alive and long ladders going up 30 stories and catching people jumping out of windows and just all kind of amazing stories of saving people, and nurses going out on the line, out into the battlefield. They've seen the witnesses. They know that they're called to something very high because people are in need. So they've been presented the witnesses. So it's like, hey, so you surrounded with all these witnesses, and there's something in your heart that says you want to do this. So come on, sign up and be a fireman or a nurse or a policeman or an ER, whatever it is, you sign up, right? I'm like, wow, that's right. Then I say, okay, let us lay aside. Now, at the time of the bombing, People were going about their normal work, some serious and some just routine, but not everybody was on duty that day. Some of them got that call. Some of them had just got off that morning, just got home cutting the grass or doing laundry or maybe went to bed, but whatever it was, they had to lay that aside. They could have said, I just got off work, man. Look, they're going to have to deal with that themselves. But because of the profession of their life, their profession, they had to lay aside. And I know it says lay aside every weight and the sin. And I know you can think about, we'll talk about that too. But the weight now is, man, I've been trying to get to my laundry all week. I need to get some things straightened out with my bank. I need to go pick up my cousin. I need to go do this. I need to go do that. Or I just want to chill today. I'm looking at this back row. Y'all taking notes? Y'all reading through it, ain't y'all? Praise God. But they had to lay that aside and come and run into the middle of trouble. Then I said, what about the sin? How are we going to? I don't understand how that's. But I understood that, believe it or not. And I know people don't always get off work and go do righteous acts of worship. Right. And I mean, that's not to discredit professionals and people. There are a lot of people who are deeply committed to their work and their level of integrity is about the highest you can get. And the people that they're committed to, they do it flawlessly. But when they get off work, it's on, baby. It's on. They rolling up, they finna go do what they do. I'm off duty, I'm going to do. And you know what? Those people, whatever that was, they had to lay that aside and go tend to these people that needed some help. One thing I learned is that the men and the women in Oklahoma City proved to be true followers of their calling. True to their profession. They kept their commitment in the worst hour. In fact, if you compare these people in Oklahoma City to Christians, if you compared what they're called to, they hitting it right on the head. They were hitting it right on the head. No matter what, this is the time you are called. They're in need. Go. And they went, risking their lives. There were talks of another bomb going off. They had no idea whether that was going to happen or not. But all they knew was people were in need. I'm gone. And so by this time, I'm looking for my exit. I'm trying to weasel out of the commitment, right? I'm like, yeah, Lord, but they were called. That's their profession. That's what they get paid to do, right? That's what we be saying when we outside of the body. Yeah, but you the pastor, right? That's what you get paid to do. And then they started to show the testimonies of all the people that weren't professionals. First woman, she said, I was at home, sitting in front of the TV, watching the news. She said, and people were going to need help. I got my truck. You know, she's kind of country. I got my truck. I fired up and I headed downtown. She said, people going to need help. And there were people that left the conferences, the conventions, bars, hotels, recreational facilities. They were watching this all over the city. They left and they all went downtown. And that was not their profession. People were in need. So there's this group of people who didn't even sign up, who said, I'm going down there. I'm not trained. I don't have equipment. I don't know what I'm going to do or how I'm going to do it, but I'm going down there and put my hands on it because people are hurting and I'm getting ready to go do something. I'm not just going to sit by and watch and let my excuse be, it's not my problem, it's not my profession, I'm not skilled, I'm not trained in it, I don't know what to do, I've never been a doctor, never been a nurse, I can't do this. They said, no, people are hurting, I'm going to do something. Can y'all see the lines coming together between these people in Oklahoma City and Christians? Which way are you running? So the Hebrews that had this letter, they weren't running in any direction. They were paralyzed. They weren't running. They needed to get back on track, get back in the race, running in the right direction. And they're told to only remember the witnesses, but also to look at Jesus. You look at verse 2, it says, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him, which joy many of these professionals had seen before. They seen firemen risk their life and seen the joy of somebody being saved. Somebody being pulled out of a fire. Somebody being found, like one woman. One woman, the way the floor above her collapsed, it collapsed almost in a perfect teepee over her head. But they had to dig and dig and dig until they got to her. And what a moment of rejoicing it was when that woman came out of there. One woman lay there, and the man was asking her, can you feel me? And she said, I wonder why he keeps asking me, can I feel him? I told him yes. And when he came out and she got up, she realized it was because there were so many other dead bodies around her that he wasn't sure whether he was touching a live one or a dead one. And he didn't want to pull on the wrong thing. But they said, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher. And you know, they were paralyzed. And I'm going to ask you the question, was Jesus ever paralyzed? Because we know that ultimately his mission was to go into the same but much worse environment than 1 minute, one Bob, one building, and one city, one tragedy. Jesus was called to run into something a whole lot worse than that. It was death for many, many generations and every nation of humanity to save all who would come to him in saving faith. Have you ever asked yourself, was Jesus ever on his mission and did he ever get paralyzed? Did he ever get to the point where he said, enough is enough. I've had enough pain. I've had enough being rejected. I've had enough of being abandoned. I've had enough, and I know that what is ahead of me is not going to get better. Did he ever get to a point where it was like he was just froze, paralyzed by it? Can anybody think of that moment? He absolutely was. In the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus on his way, all had left him. All these people that said they were down for the cause, they all gone. He just down to a few of him and his roadies. And even they couldn't stay and pray with him. He goes and he stops and he says, man, this is where I want to turn and run in a different direction. He says, Father, can you remove this cup from me? Because I'm done. Nothing seems to be changing. I mean, I'm doing what you told me to do, but everybody that was with me, they're gone. It's not growing. It's diminishing. It's so intense that he's sweating a whole lot harder than I'm sweating right now. But his sweat was magnified and intensified with the pressure of the weight of the sins of the whole world on his shoulders, trying to get him, just like they did in Oklahoma City, run the other way. You crazy if you go this way. You're going to turn around. Comfort and ease are that way. Why are you going this way? But Jesus said, nevertheless, not my will. It's not about my life. It's not about what I'm going through. It's about what they're going through. People are in need. Your will be done. The amazing thing is Jesus knew all of this up front. Yet when that pain kicked in, it still gripped him, which shows us a very real Savior. He knew he was going to suffer persecution. He knew he was going to be rejected. He knew he was going to be abandoned and betrayed and lied on. He knew all of that stuff was going to happen to him. But guess what? When it started happening, it got real. And he said, man, I'm going to quit. That's a real savior. So, as we look at this, I want you to ask yourself like I asked myself, which way are you running? Because remember, the pain, you may be paralyzed right now, don't even realize that you're paralyzed. Your zeal is gone, your hope is gone, there's no vision, you have no compassion for the lost, you're not trying to do anything, you're just worried about your own life, your own situations, you just want your own stuff fixed. And you're paralyzed. You're not in the mission. You're not running the wrong way, but you ain't running the right way either. You're just sitting there. The letter that was written to these Hebrews was because of the same reason. The pain done got real on y'all. And y'all sitting there. Get up. Get on the road. Don't forget the ones that came before you. Don't forget Jesus. Don't forget where you're going. And don't forget that you got the message of life. Get in your lane and run. He didn't say walk. He didn't say trot. He didn't say skip. So if somebody is saying run, that means there is a sense of urgency about this that we need to act on. There's a sense of urgency. People are dying right now. And I'm telling you, no different than what Jesus told you before. You read the scriptures. He said, look, you're going to be hated. He said, but remember they hated me first. You're going to be persecuted, but remember they persecuted me first. They're going to say all manner of evil against you, but remember they said it before me. He said, look, if they told me I had a devil, what you think they're going to say about you? If you think what happened to me was bad, why do you think it would be any better for you? I know this is not the, hey, let's jump and skip and think about how much better tomorrow's going to be. This is not that message, but read the letter. It wasn't for them either. This letter was not about, hey, it wasn't that kind of message. It was get up off your duff and remember what you're here for. Jesus Christ is the King. He's the Lord of glory. He's the one that's above angels and men. He's the creator of the ends of the earth. He's the first and the last. He holds salvation in his hands and he offers it freely to you. And he has commissioned you to go into that place where people are dying. And now ain't the time to be talking about your life and your problems and your pains and your aches and going on. He said, look, I know what's outside those doors, but I went outside them before you did. So ask yourself your question, because this is where the dilemma that America is in right now. Do we believe as Christians that Jesus Christ is asking us to do any less than he asked his disciples to do? If following him is going to mean, well, we won't go through the same thing, then we're delusional at best. So as you leave here today, you see the signs all over the room, all over the church. We put them everywhere. Look, they're going to call you crazy. I ain't make that up. Jesus said that. Your family made this on you. That's real. Rejection is just ahead of you. Try speaking of Jesus everywhere you go. What you heard today could change your life and everything's not going to be comfortable. But look at the signs. False accusations are that way and safety is that way. Which way are you going to choose? Which way are you running right now?